To the English, I'm a villain, biting the hand that fed. But they must understand that I don't want to hurt their country as England, only to help Ireland. I am a rebel, yes, in their eyes, a traitor, I know, but I am doing nothing dishonorable. So they can call me any name they like, but to help Ireland must bring me into conflict with England.
Casement.
And help Ireland, I must.
Casement, rouse yourself.
Captain Monteith.
We're off the coast of Kerry. As soon as you're set, they'll up periscope and surface. They'll break out the dinghy and we can row ourselves ashore.
Kerry.
Once we're on the open water, Bailey will signal to Commandant Stack and his men. They'll be waiting for us on the strand. Time for action.
Action? Yes. I must gather up my things.
For Ireland is something more than nation, something more than race. Ireland is more than any reason. She is a dream that rises from her own dark soil, more real than rock or sky. Her subjection is our shame. Her freedom is our duty. To fight for her. To die for her. To lay down my life.
No luck, sir. Just darkness.
Signal them again, Bailey. They have to be there. Keep her steady in the water, Sir Roger. Steady, man, steady!
Fire!
A revolutionary and a rake. A play actor to the last. But that's the Irish for you. All cause and no effect. A popular humanitarian, Africa and the Amazon, but a man of no character. By emotional force, he made his way. Sheer emotionalism did for him in the end.
Ireland!
Bailey, over here. Casement, for pity's sake.
Monteith, where's Bailey?
He's safe. He's here. We thought you were drowned.
Baptized, washed clean, free from the filth of that submarine.
Listen to me. There's no sign of Commandant Stack or his men. We'll have to leg it into town.
Skylarks. There are skylarks.
You rest up here. We'll find Stack and fetch a motor to collect you. There's cover back there, an old ring fort beyond the strand.
I'm fine, Monteith, I'm fine. You two go on ahead.
We'll look for you at the fort. Remember, lie low till then.
I'll remember.
We'll be back for you, I swear. Bailey, come on.
Good luck. I'll remember.
Skylarks. As a boy, I remember. A lanky stick of a boy. Papa teaching me to swim. His rough hands. A soldier's hands.
The army. Nothing will do you but the army.
And Mama?
But who's to pay for a commission now? The captain dead and your wretched mother.
Mama.
You cannot expect your Uncle John to support you forever, idling about the glens of Antrim. You'll have to learn to fend for yourself, overcome your deficiencies and earn your keep. What about the constabulary?
I want to be a hero, Aunt Charlotte.
Or Canada.
I want to be a hero and ride with General Grant.
It's high time your mother's people pulled their weight. The Bannisters of Liverpool. Perhaps they could find you something in shipping.
Papa's sword at my side, Aunt Charlotte. My long cloak flying.
You'd best buck up your ideas and learn to make your own way in the world. Or you'll be hanged for a rascal yet, young man. Hanged for a rascal yet.
Hold hand or foot and I'll shoot.
Good morning, Constable. I was just taking in the scenery. I must have nodded off.
I'll shoot, so help me.
That's a nice way to treat an English visitor, I must say.
Sergeant!
I beg pardon, Sir Earnley.
What is it, Findlay?
A dispatch from Scotland Yard, Sir Earnley. Sir Basil Thompson's office. They've taken the traitor Casement.
Alive or dead?
They're holding him in Tralee overnight. then up to Dublin for the mail boat, first thing.
Thank you, Findlay. You'd better get over to the Attorney General's office right away. Insist on seeing Sir Frederick Smith in person. Tell him I need to see him as a matter of the utmost urgency.
Alive, you say? They've captured him alive?
Yes, Sir Frederick. No resistance offered. They're presently hunting down his two companions.
And what are we to do with our revolutionary now? My compliments to Sir Ernley Blackwell. And would he arrange for us to meet with Sir Basil Thompson at the earliest opportunity?
Very well, Sir Frederick.
Ah! Archer on fire!
Captain Monteith!
Run, Bailey! Run for it! We missed our way. By the time we got back, Casement had been taken. I begged Stack to rescue him. Two or three peelers against a dozen volunteers? He refused to commit his men. He had his orders from General Pierce himself. No operations to be sanctioned that might alert the authorities. I nearly hit the bastard, but he wouldn't budge.
All right,
Bailey!
Excuse me, Sir Basil. There's a Mr. Germain outside. Something about a tin trunk and articles belonging to the traitor Casement.
Show him in, Sergeant Turner. Did those papers arrive down from the Home Office?
Not yet, Sir Basil.
Well, let me know when. No, tell you what. Send someone up to fetch them. I promised Sir Ernley he'd have them back by this afternoon.
Right, Arthur.
And Turner, you can send up these while you're at it. Transcripts of all our Irish friends' interrogations to date. There are copies for the AG. See, they're delivered to Sir Frederick Smith in person.
Right, sir.
Bring in Germain.
Mr. Germain, Sir Basil will see you now.
Ah, Mr. Germain.
Sir Basil.
Do sit down. I'm told that you have some luggage belonging to Sir Roger Casement.
I didn't have any personal connection, if you understand me, Sir Basil. Business arrangement, pure and simple. He was abroad so often, quite the nomad. He needed somewhere to store books, clothes, anything surplus to requirements. I have no idea what else is there, you understand. Simply that I felt, in the circumstances, it would be for the best.
And so it will. Did you or Mrs. Germain notice anything untoward?
No, sir. That is, I'm a bachelor, Sir Basil. I haven't opened or touched a thing.
I'll send some constables round to collect the stuff. A tin trunk, you say?
And a large portmanteau.
Thank you, Mr. Germain. You have done the right thing at a difficult moment. It will stand to you when the time comes. Sergeant Turner?
What time is that, Sir Basil?
Who knows, Germain? Who knows?
Yes, Sir Basil.
Be so good as to show the gentleman out. Keep up the good work. Turner?
Sure.
Keep a close eye on a bachelor friend.
To me, a diary is a lifeline. My only way to connect the scattered moments. Every line a mark. Proof positive. I scribble entries on the back of envelopes and receipts. Belfast, Rio, Luanda, New York. I copy them into notebooks or ledgers. Berlin, Dublin, London. The Tower of London. Last night, my guard boasted that no man held here ever escaped the scaffold. That's what I call a sense of history. English history. Axe and block, rope and rack, and proud of it. And yet they claim that England will keep faith. But what faith has England ever had to keep? The faith of imperial self-interest? The faith of a universal system of political coercion? Of commercial exploitation? And to think that I was a believer once, that England's sacred rule might bring to all its subjects people's dignity, justice, redress. So hang me! Hang me, do you hear? Don't leave me to rot in these stinking clothes. Don't hide me away in this filthy hole. I know the difference between a word and a deed, and I was not afraid to act. A touch feverish. Malaria. The legacy of Africa. And they'll not allow me any quinine. I've never feared a sudden death. Never feared pain. I'm used to it, but there are times. Times as if the body would shake itself apart. As if the skull would crack. Bone splinter. Dust. disappear. No mark. No proof that such a man had ever been.
Clothes, Sir Basil. Clothes and books. And photographs, Sir Basil, hidden at the bottom of the trunk.
Photographs?
Italian, sir. Artistic.
Naked women?
No, sir. Men, sir.
Men? Are you sure, Sergeant Turner?
No room for doubt, sir, if you see what I mean.
Anything else?
Notebooks and diaries. 1903, 1904, and a ledger. 1911.
Right. I want that stuff shipped up to the Home Office. Let Sir Ernie Blackwell know it's on the way. He'll want those diaries properly assessed. That's not for you and me. Get them out of here. Ledgers, photos, the lot. I don't want anyone in Scotland Yard to be tainted.
A Miss Bannister to see you, Sir Ernie. Gertrude Bannister?
The persistent Miss Bannister. Show her in, Findlay. And Findlay.
Sir?
Stay close.
Sir Ernie will see you now, Miss.
Miss Bannister. Thank you, Findlay. Please, be seated. What can I do for you?
I believe that you know the whereabouts of my cousin, Sir Roger Casement. I wish to see him.
You must understand that the precise location in which your cousin is presently held is a matter of extreme delicacy. I'm not at liberty to divulge what is, in fact, classified information. Perhaps if you were to try the War Office?
I have. They referred me back here to the Home Office. The Home Office then referred me to Scotland Yard, and Scotland Yard referred me back to the Home Office. And after 3 days, Sir Ernley, I have finally managed to have myself referred to you.
Miss Bannister, you must appreciate that the war has placed an intolerable strain on our whole system of governance. However, as legal coordinator of this unfortunate case, I shall do whatever lies within my limited power to assist.
I wish to visit my cousin.
Might I suggest that you give me your message and I will ensure that it reaches him at the earliest opportunity?
I want to see him in person.
Out of the question.
What are you hiding? Is he beaten? Tortured?
My dear Miss Bannister, this is not Afghanistan. Your cousin is in safe hands.
Soldiers' hands. They are killing men in Ireland, shooting them in cold blood.
Ireland is Ireland, Miss Bannister. England is quite another matter. Your cousin shall have justice. Whether it is to be before a military tribunal or a civilian court is as yet undecided.
So it is to be the firing squad, another army assassination.
A military tribunal may yet prove the most appropriate means of judging this case in time of war. Now, please, do you have any message I may relay on your behalf?
Be so good as to see that he receives this letter. There is no treason in it.
Nevertheless, it will have to be passed through the appropriate channels.
I have brought a basket of fresh food. Please see that he receives it. And a parcel of clean clothes.
Your cousin is held at His Majesty's pleasure. He is regularly fed and adequately clothed.
I shall leave them with you. You may dispose of them as your conscience finds fit. Good day, Sir Ernley.
Might I have an address where...
Care of Mrs. Alice Stopford Green, 36 Grosvenor Road.
SW1. Your hostess is an historian of distinction, an assiduous chronicler of Ireland's woes.
And England's guilt.
A most distressing narrative, to be sure. Findlay, rest assured, Miss Bannister, I shall be in touch as soon as any decision has been made as to your cousin's future.
Guard! Guard!
Ignore me, sir. I miss my camera. I have an Ensign Deluxe. Well, I did have. Lost in transit. And I am lost without it. To capture a moment in time. To hold it. Fixed. Printed. There was a lad in Belfast I photographed once. By the old fountain in the Botanic Gardens. He was an apprentice in the shipyards. Good composition, though, I say it myself. Photogenic young subject. I had barely returned to London when I heard that he was dead. A shipyard accident. Holland and Wolfe. Only it wasn't an accident. Or so I was told. And I saw him again last night. Beautiful. Broken. And my father appeared the night I arrived here. sign of Mama, as might be expected. There was a woman once down a long corridor through an open door. She was standing in a bare room, a wooden bench beneath the tall window, moonlight through the iron shutters. A tin trunk stood by the empty grate. They say I am to be transferred tomorrow. His Majesty's prison service. Hardly encouraging, though, is it? To be talking to the dead.
Tea, Sir Frederick?
Never touch the stuff. Go on, Sir Ernley.
The youngest of four, born Dublin, 1864. Family moved to England soon after. Dragged from lodging house to lodging house, then back to Ireland. Father dead, Ballymena, 1877. Mother previously deceased. No details available, just vanished off the face of the earth.
Orphaned at 11.
Boo-hoo. Tea, Sir Ernley?
Thank you, Sir Basil. Milk, no sugar. Children passed from pillar to post. Friends of the family, cousins in Antrim.
What has all this got to do with anything? Hang the bugger, say I. Milk, no sugar.
Thank you.
Every man is a story, Sir Basil. Learn the story, learn the man. Learn the man, and with a bit of luck, you may lead him to hang himself, which is our aim, is it not? Go on, Sir Ernley.
Dispatched from Antrim to Liverpool at 15. His mother's people, the Bannisters.
Not many years in Ireland, then.
More in England.
Help yourself to a biscuit.
Liverpool, a clerkship, the Elder Dempster line. Entered the consular service. Consul General, 1904.
Congo Casement, the Amazon report. Arise, Sir Roger Casement, KB. Did rather well for himself after all.
Retired from the service December 1911.
To devote himself to Kathleen Ni Houlihan.
Kathleen what?
Ni Houlihan, Sir Basil. A sort of Irish Britannia. Only a great deal more alluring.
Oh.
Yet what is she to him or he to her that he should become quite so enthralled? Now, what about those diaries?
I have the psychiatrist's report.
Any signs of mental instability?
No evidence of delusion or general intellectual defect. However, and I quote, the pages shown us contain definite evidence of sexual perversion of a very advanced type, both long-standing and chronic. The detail recorded and the intermingling of everyday material are particularly unusual, pointing to an obsessive or addictive personality.
Is he insane?
Not certifiably.
Then he is sane.
He must be regarded at least as mentally abnormal.
So much for Harley Street.
How can you possibly broach material like this in open court, Sir Frederick?
How is it that so much of this smut has already found its way into the public domain, Sir Basil?
I have instructed Findlay, my department, to conduct a thorough investigation. However, there is no use pretending that these unfortunate revelations have not worked to our advantage.
I dare say, Sir Ernley. But I would prefer if they were to stop, at least for the duration of the trial.
I'm sure Findlay will be up to the job.
Well, gentlemen, what is the way forward? Strategy, my friends.
Break his neck.
Strategy, Sir Basil. We need a strategy. What if we were to offer the defence a plea of insanity?
On the basis of the diaries?
And lose a man?
Our man is a traitor, but he presents himself as a patriot.
How can you make a patriot of a pervert?
Precisely, Sir Basil.
Show them the diaries and offer them insanity.
Even if they don't go along with it, they'll have seen the diaries.
And they'll know their man.
And they will know that we know him too. What about a second charge?
Gross indecency?
A second trial.
But if we get him on the first count, he'll be dead.
But if we don't, Sir Basil, if the jury acquits or fails to reach a unanimous verdict, we cannot hang him then. What do we have on the second count?
On a charge of gross indecency, we have the diaries. There are also references to a regular sexual partner in Ireland by the name of Millar Gordon, or Gordon Millar. The name is unclear from the entries. Our man in Belfast is on the case.
And on the first count?
Bailey, one of Casement's so-called Irish Brigade, has turned and is willing to testify to Casement's recruitment drive in German prisoner of war camps. A copy of the treaty concluded with German High Command. Transcripts of pro-German speeches made in the USA.
What are our American cousins making of all this, by the way?
Ambassador Page has indicated that the president is unwilling to intervene.
You surprise me.
It would appear that he has got wind of the diaries. Nearer home, the Cardinal of Westminster has indicated that he will have nothing to do with the man.
My word, but you have been busy.
If a job is worth doing, it's worth doing thoroughly.
The Cardinal of Armagh?
Is as yet unaware of the realities of the case.
But lobbying against us?
To the Vatican.
Who are?
Sympathetic.
If only they could be made to see reason.
Hardly the Vatican's strongest suit, Sir Basil.
There is also the matter of the palace.
Oh, yes?
His Majesty has stated a preference for our man to shoot himself.
Does he propose we supply a revolver? No, gentlemen. All things considered, if we are to hang our humanitarian, we must nail him on the first count, under the statute of Edward III. Adhering to the king's enemies and giving evil example to others in like case.
He is arraigned and tried in open court by a jury of 12 good men and true.
Englishmen.
They are unanimous in the matter of his guilt.
Perhaps, certainly. Perhaps.
The black cap, the rope, the quicklime, may the Lord have mercy on his soul.
Because I most certainly won't.
But others will, Sir Basil.
Beg pardon?
Precisely.
There is an appeal to the House of Lords.
For which permission must be secured from the Attorney General.
But you are the Attorney General, Sir Frederick.
So I am, Sir Basil.
There is no appeal.
But there is a plea for clemency, agitation for a reprieve.
A petition?
Several petitions and several petitioners.
His old Congo reform cronies, the Amazon lobbyists.
Every humanitarian and attention seeker the length and breadth of the empire.
The cabinet might split. The tide of public opinion might turn.
Let's not make another martyr for Ireland.
War fatigue. Too many have died.
Reprieve, reprieve.
Oh, don't tell me the treacherous bugger doesn't hang after all.
Well, gentlemen, whichever way you look at it, these diaries are critical to our success. But I must insist they be kept under lock and key and should be seen only by a chosen few. No more than is strictly necessary, Sir Ernley.
Very well, Sir Frederick.
As to our strategy, I shall offer them insanity, which they will almost certainly reject. Our man is far too eager for his moment in the dock to settle for madness. Then I shall proceed on the first count of high treason, and he can play the patriot's role to his heart's content. But I shall let them know of our preparations on the second count, which we will continue to make in detail, Sir Basil.
Oh, very well.
Thank you, gentlemen. Nothing like a hanging to concentrate the mind. Eh, Sir Basil? No. And Sir Ernley?
Yes, Sir Frederick.
God bless the work.
I can never make out whether that man is entirely serious.
I fear he has spent too much of his time in Ireland.
Still, he is one of us. Though between ourselves, I did hear they used to refer to him over there as Carson's Galloper.
A military term, I think you'll find, Sir Basil.
Hmm?
Cavalry.
Oh, I see. Well, clever chap. Rather have him on my side than against. Spot a hot?
No, thank you. I'd better get back to the Home Office.
I suppose it will stand to us, certainly, when the time comes.
Oh, it will, Sir Basil. In time.
Good morning, Sir Roger.
Oh, Warder Benson.
Visitor for you, sir.
A visitor?
This way, miss.
Gertrude!
Roddy? Oh, my darling Roddy.
Gertrude, my dearest G.
But you've lost so much weight.
I'm grand. I'm so much better since they moved me here. Let me look at you. My favourite schoolmarm.
Oh, they wouldn't tell me where you were. It was impossible. I left messages, letters. They promised me they'd pass them on.
Well, they haven't yet.
Blast them. Well, blast them anyway. Whatever did you think of me?
I thought of you often, and I knew very well that you'd be thinking of me, but our time is short. Has there been any word from Nina?
Would you be so kind as to leave us, please, Warder? I wish to speak about private matters, family affairs.
There's no privacy here, Gertrude. Solitude, yes, but no privacy. And he's not to blame, are you, Mr. Benson?
Only doing my duty, miss.
Have you had any contact?
Nina sends her love. She's quite furious at your treatment. Attacked a lady in Manhattan restaurant for blackguarding you.
That's my big sister. And Tom and Charlie?
Australia is a long way.
Of course. Anything from the Antrim branch?
No, not a word.
Why am I not surprised?
And you have Mr. Duffy to represent you.
Duffy is in charge of the good ship Hope. I'm to be arraigned on a charge of high treason. Sounds positively Shakespearean, doesn't it? I'll certainly have to dress for the occasion. Perhaps I should be arraigned in a kilt. What do you think? And how are the young hussies of Queen Anne's College? Are they as demanding as ever?
Still the same. Though you should know I've decided to take a short break from teaching.
Really?
I've moved in with Mrs. Stopford Green just for a while. I'm helping her to organise a petition on your behalf.
You're staying with Alice?
She kindly invited me, and she sent you these. Look, essays, books, pamphlets. She thought it would be important for you to prepare a detailed historical perspective to back up any legal arguments.
But what about your rooms, your teaching?
I thought it best if I took a short sabbatical. And then when Alice offered to take me in,
Take you in?
Oh, Roddy, please, I didn't...
What has happened? Please. Gertrude, you must tell me.
The headmistress and I agreed it would be prudent if I were to step down.
You were turfed out onto the streets of London because of me.
I'm safe with Alice now. We've set up a committee, and she has introduced me to Bernard Shaw. He says that he is prepared to write you a defence, but only on condition that you represent yourself.
I would never harm you.
No lawyers. He's quite adamant about that.
But I would never hurt you.
Listen to me, Roddy. This is important. Mr. Shaw argues that you cannot have committed treason against your country when your country is Ireland, not England. But he is utterly against you placing your case in the hands of lawyers.
Here's the thing about the professions. Conspiracies against common sense.
Lawyers argue points of law. He believes you should ignore them and put your own case as an Irishman who should be tried before an Irish court by an Irish jury.
Dearest G, I appreciate your canvassing support on my behalf, but I think it would be wiser to follow Duffy's advice.
Roddy, please.
He has already engaged his brother-in-law, O'Sullivan of King's Inn, and he will give them a run for their money. And if O'Sullivan's defence should fail, well, then I have the right to make a speech from the dock, and I can state my own case then.
But only after the verdict. Your best hope, Mr. Shaw's convinced your only hope, is to defend yourself, win over some of the jury, and rob the prosecution of a unanimous verdict. They cannot harm you without it. He is prepared to write the defence for you, no fee. He guarantees a speech that will bring the house down.
I shall write my own speech, thank you very much. And I shall deliver it myself. And it will be a speech, I promise you, to bring down the house and empire, king and all.
This is not a game, Roddy. They mean to kill you. You must save yourself by splitting the jury. They cannot touch you then. Roddy, dearest, I beg you.
Maybe you're right, Alana, but I simply don't have the strength to best Sir Frederick Smith.
But, Roddy, you can't...
No, Gertrude, please. O'Sullivan must do the business. If he fails, he fails. But I will have my speech from the dock. And when I will speak for Ireland.
You heard the news from Dublin?
Duffy told me. All executed.
Pierce, Connolly, 15 men all told. Dozens more killed in the fighting, the city half destroyed.
I don't understand it. I simply do not. When Pierce knew that I had failed, when he knew that I had brought no men, no hope, and he got my message, others will have seen to that, for pity's sake. The man was outnumbered and outgunned 1,000 times. What sort of general is it that gives such an order? To sign away the lives of his own men. And for what? Why? Folly. Arrogant folly. Vain. Futile. Cruel.
Oh, Roddy, I'm so frightened. The things that are being said about you. The terrible things that are being written every day. Some dreadful insinuation.
Hush now. That's all nonsense. They will blacken my name by any means they can. They did it to Parnell. They'll try it on with me. All part of the system.
But, Roddy...
Time's up, miss.
It can't be.
Afraid so, miss. Regulations.
You'll have to leave me now, G.
My dearest man.
Do you remember the day I was confirmed? All those years ago, beside the Mersey, you found me hiding in the garden shed?
You told me to go away. There was something wrong with your eyes.
But you stood your ground and dried my tears and swore you'd never tell a living soul.
I never did.
There are so many things I cannot tell you now. It's all become so confused, so idiotic and wrong, plain wrong. But I have to try and make sense of it on my own. Will you thank Alice for the books? They've come in very handy for my speech. I'll set about it tonight. A speech to make bold Emmett proud.
Oh, God.
there is an objection. Yes, there is an objection. Moral, not legal, to the application of an English statute 600 years old to deprive an Irishman of life and honour today. Beat them head on, yes. Life and honour today. Life and honour today. Cold. So cold. The government of Ireland by England rests on restraint, not law. Restraint demands no love. It evokes no loyalty. Loyalty is a sentiment, not a law. Conquest gives no title. Conquest exists over the body, but it fails over the mind. It fails...
Shame.
No, oh no. The indictment. Stick to the indictment.
Shame and disgrace.
No! Adhering to the king's enemies, giving evil example to others in like case.
To turn on your people, to spit on your own.
What evil? What others?
Parading like a Judas before our captive Tommies.
I make no appeal to England, to Ireland I came.
With your German guns and your German treaty and your German gold.
They were Irishmen, Aunt Charlotte. Fellow Irishmen duped by the Home Rule leaders into fighting an unjust war. A British provocation.
But they saw through you quick enough. They spat in your face.
Not true.
They heckled and they jeered.
That is not true.
And with scorn in their eyes and stones in their fists, they drove you from their midst.
They were broken men, demoralized.
The Irish Brigade, a jeer and a joke for generations to come.
I owe you nothing, nothing. Every step I made in this world I made by myself, myself alone.
Where's your brave general now? Your trained volunteers abandoned you to the hangman's rope, betrayer and betrayed.
You're dead. Long dead.
It'll come soon enough, never fear.
Let me be.
Oh, but you're the right hero now, your long cloak flying. Ireland's martyr and Ireland's dupe. The treacherous spawn of a wastrel and a drunkard of a woman unfit to rear a dog.
What did you ever care for us?
God save the king.
Mama loved us.
God save him from the likes of you.
She would never have abandoned me. No one there. There's no one there. I made no appeal to England, to Ireland I came. To Ireland I came. It is the fundamental right of every Englishman to be tried by a jury of his peers. It is the basis of all his freedoms. I, too, have a right, an indefeasible right, to be tried as an Irishman in an Irish court before a jury of my Irish peers. My Irish... Oh, my brave general. You never intended to heed me. You never intended to delay. And I believed that you would listen. I believed that you would save your men and save our cause. A wasted journey. A wasted life. And I must stand now and speak for Ireland. I must stand and speak for you.
Gentlemen of the jury.
Each morning at 9, Alice and I join the queue for the public gallery. We sit far up and watch, as silent as my cousin in the court below, as O'Sullivan's defence staggers under the weight of its own ingenuity. Point of law follows point of law, until halfway through his final address, his voice falters.
None, whatever.
And he stands, silent, staring at the bench.
I regret to say, my lord, I have completely broken down.
Order, order.
The Lord Chief Justice is solicitous. There is an adjournment. The next day, O'Sullivan's junior completes the speech on his behalf. Not that it matters. Not that any of it ever really mattered. The jury is out for less than an hour. Their decision is unanimous.
What about Miss Bannister, Sir Ernley? She's been waiting out there this hour or more.
Oh, very well, Findlay. What is the latest report on her wretched cousin, by the way?
On suicide watch, sir. But, bearing up, it would appear he's turned to religion.
Religion?
Taking instruction from the Orsay chaplain, the Confessions of St. Augustine.
Much good may it do him. You'd better show her in. And, Findlay...
Sir?
Stay close.
This way, miss.
My dear Miss Bannister, how good of you to come. Please allow me to say that whatever my personal feelings about your cousin's behaviour, they do not blind me to the distress it must cause you and your family.
I insist that you stop printing this filth about Sir Roger Casement.
I beg your pardon?
I insist that you stop this vile campaign to blacken his name. Stop it forthwith.
I assure you that I have no control over what is printed in the newspapers.
You and your confederates set out to destroy my cousin's good name in order to destroy his cause and prevent a reprieve. Forgeries, lies, you will stop at nothing until you have murdered him.
These are very grave accusations, Miss Bannister. And were it not for your obvious distress, I would have to consider taking stern action against such an attack on my good name.
Do not patronize me, Sir Ernley. If you will not stop this vicious campaign against Sir Roger Casement, I too can go to Fleet Street. I shall expose your dirty game.
I would strongly advise against it. Not only because you will not be very welcome in Fleet Street, your cousin's treachery has seen to that, but it has obviously not occurred to you that these rumours may be true.
How dare you say that to my face?
No, dear lady, how dare you? You have said things to me that were you a man, I should have struck you.
Show me the diaries.
Are you mad?
I demand that you show me the diaries.
Out of the question.
Because they do not exist.
Oh, they exist, all right, but they are not the sort of books that could possibly be shown to a lady.
Because they do not exist.
They do exist. They are vile beyond belief.
Do not underestimate me, Sir Ernley. If you do not stop these acts of deliberate sabotage, I shall cry your guilt to the whole of Fleet Street. I will ensure that every American reporter in London knows what you have done. That is your choice. Call off your vicious campaign or face the consequences.
Findlay, this is a catastrophe entirely of your own making, Miss Bannister.
You called, Sir Ernley?
Fetch me the strongbox.
Sir?
You heard me.
You aren't, but you cannot.
Just bring it.
Miss?
Please do as Sir Ernley asks.
Yes, miss.
Miss Bannister, I appeal to you. Do not abandon your womanhood. Think of the danger to your reputation.
I appreciate your concern, Sir Ernley. But it is his reputation that I must save.
Very well. I cannot leave you alone with this filth, but I will turn my back so that you may read unobserved, and at least some semblance of modesty may be preserved.
The strongbox, sir.
Set it down on the table, Findlay. Wait outside.
Yes, Sir Ernley.
I will place the books on the table. The yellow markers indicate the passages of the greatest depravity. I will now turn my back, and you may read.
Thank you.
You recognize your cousin's handwriting?
I do.
Then I beg you, do not proceed any further.
I will read.
Very well. Please inform me when you have read enough. Is that not enough for you, Miss Bannister? Must you read more? I'm going to turn round on the count of three. Please stop reading and shut the books. One, two, three. Where the devil... Findlay! Findlay!
How great a mystery is the human memory. Who knows its limits? Yet it is my mind, it is myself. Who is this I say I am? I, who cannot fathom the depths of my own mind. Augustine, the Confessions. Lent to me by the prison chaplain. I read, I sleep, I dream. I wake to read again, sleep again, And all the time the warders at the peephole, in case I should deny them the pleasure. I have forgotten so many. And then I dream, and there they are again, crowding the parks, the avenues, the quays. Who was I stalking all those years, like a fever in the blood? All day they had been coming from the villages down to the river station where I had set up my inquiry. Men, women, boys, all mutilated or disfigured. Punishment for this or that infringement of company rules. One man carried his own right hand, a blackened claw that he held up for my inspection. Another showed me the mound of flesh between his legs. They had cut off his genitals, and now he must relieve himself through a rubber tube. All day, stories of the whipping block, machete, chain, fire. A young woman, bent like a hoop, told how they had penetrated her front and back with burning brands. They had roasted her children on a spit. That night I took to the quays, the park, wherever I could find them. Soldiers, mostly. Native policemen, sailors off the river steamers. All night I serviced them. No sleep. The stars cooling the sky. Who is this I say I am?
We'll take our brandies in here, Sir Only. No cooler, I'm afraid, but more private. Sir Basil will join us later. A late night at the Yard. Nothing worse than London in August. So, what news on the casement front? How fare the reprievers?
You foresaw developments very exactly, Sir Frederick, but even you did not anticipate the sheer strength of reaction in Irish America. Petitions from every Irish-American organization and association the length and breadth of the country.
To be expected.
A petition from the Negro Fellowship League.
To be ignored.
Then there is the Vatican.
Oh, yes.
The Apostolic Nuncio has this afternoon delivered a letter indicating that Casement went to Ireland to stop the rebellion. He contacted a Father Ryan while in custody overnight in Tralee and begged the man to get his message to the rebel leadership in Dublin. The Germans had failed to deliver enough guns, the Irish brigade was a fiasco, and Casement refused to commit his men to a hopeless fight.
Has this been sent to Cabinet?
I'm to do so in the morning. There is also an amount of resentment over the role the diaries have played since the trial. There are claims by Casement's supporters that they are forgeries, government forgeries.
So you think you may have overplayed your hand, Sir Only?
I have followed your instructions to the letter, Sir Frederick.
Well, that letter is certainly an interesting development.
It does rather dent the prosecution's case.
You could say that. But then, of course, with the cabinet meeting tomorrow and the execution scheduled for the day after, it might so easily be redirected to the War Office or Scotland Yard, if you are still determined to hang him, that is. Personally, I bear no animus against the man. More brandy?
No, thank you.
I must say your zeal in coordinating this case has been exemplary. I hope you don't mind me asking why.
I would have thought the reasons were self-evident.
Don't misunderstand me. I'm delighted to have won the case. I'm more than happy to acknowledge your encyclopedic research. But I detect something different in your attitude than in mine.
I don't know what you're driving at.
I'm a barrister. Prosecution is my profession. For reasons of strategy and economics, I am a unionist. I defend the Union. But after my time in Ireland, I know something of Casement and his kind. His treason is nothing particular there, though his quaint sense of chivalry does set him apart from the more calculating fanatics like Pierce. But for all that, there is something in him I cannot help but admire.
Admire?
A reckless passion for lost causes. You have to admit his speech from the dock was pretty spellbinding.
I found it fatuous and embarrassing.
No ear for rhetoric, my friend. Oh, he's the real thing, all right. And he was spot on. What he said about me and Ned Carson? If it hadn't been for the war, we would have ended up in the dock rather than on our way to the Woolsack.
You would never have betrayed your country.
There was a time when Ned and I cared not one jot for King or Kaiser, just so long as one of them would give us guns.
You and Sir Edward were defending the Union, protecting the Empire.
And that's what counts? The motive, not the means?
When the motive is loyalty.
But loyalty to what? To whom? We ran German guns into Ireland. And if the Kaiser had guaranteed us our birthright, we would have come to terms. That was Casement's warrant, too, when he armed his Dublin volunteers. Do I shock you, Sir Ernley?
No, but I'd rather you didn't talk like that.
I shock you. But you haven't answered my question. Why do you hate Casement?
I don't hate the man. It is simply a question of duty. Duty to my king, my country, a duty to the Empire.
Spoken like a true-born Englishman.
But that is what I am.
You should spend some time in Ireland, my friend. Magnificent scenery and a whole new perspective on life. On death, too. They're quite obsessed by it. They call themselves the dispossessed. They see themselves as a victim people, perpetual victims of our aggression towards them, which belief serves simultaneously both to justify and excuse their boundless aggression towards us. A general absolution for centuries of murder and terror, which they characterize as their fight for freedom. A fight which is, in reality, no more than revenge. The vengeance of an abandoned child, howling for its impossible mother. But then again, loyalty to Britain and her empire has always meant subservience to England and English interests. So what's a true-born Irishman to do?
Sorry to be late, Sir Frederick.
Sir Basil. Brandy? Cigar?
I bring great news. The Huns have shot Captain Fryatt.
Good God.
Captain Fryatt? Not the fellow who ran the U-boat with his ferry?
The same.
They shot him?
Poor devil.
Court-martial, firing squad, a non-combatant. A merchant seaman. They shot him!
Poor helpless devil.
A martyr. An English martyr, no less. Let them stop us hanging Casement now.
You see, Sir Ernley, God is an Englishman after all.
Right, damn you. What else are you good for? I, Roger David Casement, being of sound mind, though somewhat shaken, do hereby make my final testament, and being of such shaken but determined mind, to affirm the following: that love is not enough. There must be justice, too. That justice is not enough. There must be redress for injustice suffered. That words are not enough, but a deed may never be undone. That my life has been made forfeit through another man's vanity, and there is nothing left for me but to die as brave a death as he has died. My only purpose now, my only hope of meaning. There was no German gold. I offered those men in the prison camps only death and hardship. There were German guns, yes, half useless and half as many as I had begged for. They insisted I bring my Irish brigade with me, all 50 of them. But I said I wouldn't hand them over to the English hangman. I could have stayed myself, but I was honor-bound. What does it matter? What does any of it matter? I did see action once. The South African War. British military intelligence. I saw the Boer farmers with their wives and children herded like cattle into the camps. And for the first time, I saw that I rode with the herdsmen. And I knew that I was born to break their ranks or be broken in turn. Sleep now. Let it come. Night, the lingering heat of day. I step from the glow of the street lamps into the park. Shadows beneath the trees. Men stalking the dark. We move as one through the tunnel of leaves until we come to a clearing, as broad as it is long. At its center stands a marble fountain, its basin cracked and dry. We gather at the stone's edge, silent, expectant. A rip of lightning, and I see him. Tall, black, naked. His back is to me, cut and bloodied by his scourging. I cry out, but the sound catches in my throat. He turns towards me, and there I see it. Huge, erect. It starts to rain. A tropical downpour. The ground is awash, the basin brimming. A voice says, "Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood." I drop to my knees. He raises his right hand and spits on the palm. He smears my throat with his spittle, and my voice is loosed. I shout, I roar, I will eat. I will eat,
Roddy.
And I will drink.
Roddy, dearest. It's me, Gertrude. You were asleep.
Gertrude?
I didn't know if I should wake you.
Oh, my dearest G, how good of you to come. How good of you to come at the last.
Oh, Roddy.
Shh. Now, Elena, hush now, or I'll not bear it. And I must, you know I must.
I know that, yes. I do know that.
There is something I have to tell you. Something I don't want you to hear from anyone else. I am to be received into the Roman Catholic Church. I am to make my confession and receive communion on the day itself. And I've left you all my papers and things. They'll have to pass through the proper channels, of course, but Duffy has promised to retrieve them from your pal, Sir Ernie. Please tell the family I was calm. Tell them I was at peace.
I will.
I'm so grateful for your loyalty and your love, your brave, unfailing love.
Is there someone else you would wish me to contact?
Well, I've written to all the friends that are left to me. Hail and farewell.
No, Roddy, what I meant is there some young man in particular that you might wish me to give a message? Something that cannot be written down?
They showed you?
I insisted on the truth.
About who I am?
No, it does not define you.
Oh.
Cannot define you.
My dearest girl, how could you?
You left me no choice. Of course, I was shocked, frightened when I read. But then I thought of you. And I found I was no longer threatened, however strange, however hurtful. I saw that it was human. A part of what you are, of who you are, but it was still you, still the same brave, lonely boy that I first loved and always will.
What can I say?
His name. Say his name.
Miller. Miller Gordon. A clerk in the Belfast Bank. Tell him I ask his forgiveness. Tell him I remember Warren Point. The hotel in Warren Point.
I'll tell him.
Do you remember the poem of Yeats we were both so cracked about? I can't get it out of my head these last few days. The wrong of unshapely things is a wrong too great to be told. I hunger to build them anew.
And sit and on a green knoll apart with the earth, the sky, and the water, remade like a casket of gold for dreams of your image
that blossoms a rose in the deeps of my heart.
The lover tells of the rose in his heart.
That's it. That's Ireland. All that should have been.
And will be, believe me.
Bring me home. Don't leave me to lie in this terrible place. I'm sorry. After all I've put you through, the harm I've done.
No, Roddy.
I only meant to break the system, to end the cruelty. But I was the system, and it has broken me.
You never sided with them, never. You chose instead to live in truth. That means to live with confusion and doubt, yes, and failure too. But it also means to live with courage. Courage, compassion, and honor.
Words. Words, they're not enough. They make nothing change. Nothing. They cannot answer who I am.
Hush now, my love.
Protect my name. Don't let them shame my cause. Don't let them dishonor me.
One notebook, Sir Ernley. A prison diary.
Burn.
Collection of essays and pamphlets.
Burn.
Metal crucifix.
Return to Miss Bannister.
Shoes, one pair. Cufflinks, studs.
Miss Bannister.
That's it, sir. Oh, and a toothbrush.
Burn. As to the files, empty them. Save the diaries of 1903, 10, 11, and the ledger of 1911. Burn the rest.
Sir Ernley Blackwell?
Dr. Mander, do come in. That will be all, Findlay.
Yes, sir.
Doctor, how good of you to call.
I came straight from the morgue, left as soon as I'd cleaned up. Here is my report as requested.
I am most grateful.
Death was instantaneous. Severed vertebrae, spinal cord. As to the matter you specified, I made a digital investigation. Rubber gloves. The bowel was dilated as far as I could reach. A sure sign of an invert. There was visual evidence, too. The anus clearly distended. It's all in the report.
Proof positive. Thank you.
I can't understand why these people don't just shoot themselves, save the rest of us a lot of time and trouble.
But they don't. They won't.
I'll send my bill. Good day, Sir Ernley.
There will be no martyrdom. There is no martyr. The quicklime and the diaries will see to that.
Of course they are forgeries. Government forgeries. My cousin, Sir Roger Casement, laid down his life for his country. He died at the hands of ruthless enemies who denied him justice and mercy. Whatever the ground in which he lies, that ground is made holy by his presence.